Hello and welcome to Ops and Hops, the podcast for those who like beer but have to work in tech to afford it. Today I've got Augusto Valdivia, a DevOps specialist for an engineering consulting firm that specializes in data-heavy workloads and IoT within AWS. How's it going, Augusto?
Going well. Thank you for having me. Very nice.
Yeah, we've been friends for years now. We've been following the same similar paths and working in tech for a while and constantly talking to each other on social medias and whatnot. You don't have to go far. If you see one of us, the other one is probably close by.
Yep.
So Augusto, what are you drinking today?
I'm drinking a drink from my country. It's called Nica Libre, and it's basically rum from Nicaragua. The name of the rum is Flor de Caña. It's dark rum with ice, lime, and coke.
That sounds fantastic. Not exactly full of hops, but that is perfectly fine. Today, I've got the Pipeworks Ninja versus Unicorn. That's a little bit of a reflection there.
Yep.
Ninja versus Unicorn IPA. It's a little stronger than what I've been trying to drink lately. It's Friday, so who cares? As you can see, there we go.
Cheers, man.
Cheers. AI is trying to make my glass disappear.
Yeah. AI is taking over everything.
Oh, I know. Let it. I'm tired of working. So anyway, first things first, Augusto, you just came back from reInvent. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you actually remember from that experience?
They said what happened in Vegas and they stay in Vegas. But because it's reInvent, we are allowed to share. And the whole point of going to reInvent is to go back and share the information with the community. I'm assuming, and of course, I think that you're not surprised that one of the main topics in reInvent was AI.
Of course, of course.
I gathered a lot of information around the topic and the different sectors, how people are using AI. So such as, for example, one specific one that I remember very clear is for online molester detectors. So there is this professor for a university in New York. She's running this program where they are helping to keep internet secure for youth and children. Mm-hmm. So they have this AI model language in the background reading and looking for patterns in the internet to detect those molesters. And it has been very successful according to the presenter. And I was very happy to hear that AI is being used at that level, because you know that I have kids and I want them to be safe in real life and also online. So it was wonderful to see that functionality, how people are using this new technology and in a good way, right? One of the other topics that also was very interesting to see is like how IoT is going and growing from smart cities to smart building, and even how to create a perfect rice grain based on picture detection. They had this drone flying across the fields looking for any virus that is attacking the rice, then using AI to create this perfect rice. And I thought I was already eating a perfect rice. But I guess not.
I don't think I want perfect rice. I don't want to hit some new threshold that I've got to find everywhere, because I have a feeling not everybody's going to have perfect rice or perfect anything for that matter.
Yeah.
I like my mid-tier rice right now.
Right. But I feel like just to hit a little bit on that topic of the rice, I feel that if on the developing countries where is one of the main resources is agriculture, so this technology, if it is available for them to use it, I think this is going to increase the revenues for this country, and also how they're going to be exporting perforite, and they can compete with bigger countries who are not necessarily agriculture by trade, but they just have their own lab. They have the possibility to do it indoors. It's changing. It's again changing.
No, that's great. I guess you could think Monsanto. Of course, they have the ability to create all sorts of crossbreeds and hybrid strains and things like that. Mm-hmm. So they can ensure that these viruses are never going to hit. And of course, your opinion on GMOs aside or anybody else's. We're not going to dive down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But I could definitely see if you're not able to create this like cross strain that resists the virus, being able to see the spread of the virus before it gets anywhere serious and to be able to isolate that could be huge. I imagine if you said they've got drones flying over rice paddies, they're able to see like discoloration or something that indicates that, hey, there's a spot that's dying. We need to isolate that right now before it spreads to the rest of the field. Is that something like maybe you were seeing?
Yeah, exactly. So they can, instead of waiting for weeks to get as human to walk through this large amount of fields that are going by one and checking, you can have a drone going every day. They don't probably, you need to charge it, but they don't get tired. You can just charge it, get a new one and go again and fly and continue monitoring this. But the amount of, I imagine, is that the amount of pictures that they are collecting and feeding this model to understand what's the best way and what's the section of this field that has the possible best price out of them. So how can we get the rest to that point? And changing a little bit the topic of the rice. So also talking about picture, how hospital has been growing this train models through the years, because I don't know if you remember for last year, by the way, you were missed this year. It wasn't the same without you there.
Probably a lot quieter.
Huh? last year, they were talking a lot about how healthcare and hospital are using LLM to read vast amount of pictures to detect cancer like before even happening. So now it's like in action, they have increased a huge amount of the results that they're like getting from this train model that they're using right now. It's unbelievable things that they said, things that we couldn't do without AI. Now it's so simple to follow, but it's there, it's for everybody. So I hope that everybody is using it in a good way. And what else I saw even other than a lot of swags, obviously, a lot of stickers.
It's got to be really great when you got kids.
Yeah. And then one thing that surprised me, though, is that for the first time in a very long time, the crown was taken away from serverless. AI took over.
Yeah, you're right. Obviously, Kubernetes is always there a little bit, but serverless with AWS is always pushed way more at these conferences.
Yeah. So it's, but this year it was like
nice
not so
not
much
to hear it for 2 seconds. Yeah.
This year was not so much serverless. Everything was like AI for everything. AI for everything. And obviously
AI serverless.
They promoted a lot their own AI service like Queue. Queue can be used everywhere, not only with QuickSight, but can be used to help you on the console. I've been actually testing right now, asking questions, how these policies and this about this resource. Can you tell me a little bit more of that? So it's interesting. I think it's still a little bit like missing some points. Obviously, it's still under development, it just isn't better, but it is huge. Other things, Party Road. Have you tried Party Road?
No, I have not tried it yet.
So I created a few apps, I believe, if I count correctly, I created about like 15 apps. So how Party Road's work is just like a prompt type of like similar to all the big names like ChatGPT and whatnot. Yep. You put you created a prompt saying, hey, I need an app that creates this for me. You provide the requirements and then throws that for you. Two of my favorite apps that I have created with Party Rock so far. First one is I created an app that helped me to sympathize with my 8 years old daughter when she is not feeling well.
Oh, wow. That might actually be a game changer right there.
So I put the input as a user saying, simple example, my daughter is upset because she couldn't eat her lollipop at this time before dinner. So the application responds to me by saying, my understanding that the main feeling that your 8 years old daughter is having right now is that she's upset because she's not eating the lollipop. How can you continue with this conversation? So say it comes like this, it's insane how it comes. Hey, sweetie, I know that you might be upset.
I think I might go and create a ask questions for podcast Party Rock app. That might be a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. And then I give you all these tips how to speak with your all your daughters. Come on, like, we are humans, but sometimes as a human or as a parent, I'm going to say, it's not easy to be a parent. You don't have a school for that. There are books, but you can read books, but kids are different. So they're going to behave different. They're going to act different. And no matter how much education you have, never comes as you study. Second app that I created is a bartender superhero. So now the festivities are coming. You can provide 1 to 3 ingredients and the app create you a perfect drink for that.
So I have used Party Rock. I forgot. I did use it. And those of you who are from or know anything about Chicago might have heard of a drink called Malort. If you look it up on YouTube, you can look up like why does Malort taste bad or whatever. And there's a lot of really funny mock commercials about it because it's notoriously horrible tasting. Although some people just have a gene where it just tastes fine. Like to me, it just tastes fine. So I actually created a bot that only creates drinks with Malort in them.
Mm-hmm.
So you could go on and say, hey, I'd love a really nice, classy drink. And it's going to come up. The first ingredient is going to be Malort.
Oh, wow.
So it comes up with some drinks that are surprisingly okay. But of course, most people, when they see the word Malort, they just absolutely lose their mind. But yeah, I expect the comments section, if anybody watches this long enough to get to this section, to explode right as I said Malort, at least from the Chicago area.
Yeah, that's good. I'm gonna send you the links also for the Party Rock apps. They are
free, we'll share them on the podcast too.
Yeah, they're free and they're public to access, and people can create what AWS named the remix of the apps. So you can create a second copy and then improve it, right? This is why we are here, right?
Yeah.
So to get the main idea, improve it. I'm not saying, don't give me credit. I did probably somebody did it before, but
prompt engineering is huge right now. There are people getting paid $300,000-$500,000 a year, you know, for prompt engineering, and it's wild. But everybody thinks it's just asking a bunch of questions, but it gets a little crazy because you have to remember these prompts have a lot of very sensitive information, and these bots know a lot of sensitive things. So you've got to make sure that these bots aren't going to divulge these secrets. And a lot of red teamers are figuring out how to come and attack these, do prompt injection and attacks and things like that. And they're finding ways to convince the LLM to spit out all of this sensitive data.
Mm.
And they're finding ways to convince it to spit out its own prompt. It's really interesting how fast everything is evolving and how much you need to be on top of it to keep some serious mistakes from happening.
Yeah, exactly. So like I said, like going back to my early comments, there is AI for everything, for good, for bad, right? So we just need to be like careful, as you said, like your recommendation is on point there, like 100%. You need to be careful to what kind of information you give to your AI assistant and be careful, right? Because like you said, there are other bad actors out there trying to get you either way.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit, Augusto, about how you got to where you are now. I know it wasn't exactly the wake up one day, go to school, go to another school, get an internship, hop into a job, and then all of a sudden, hey, we're here. Sounds like you put in a lot more legwork, a little more sweat to get there. How did that look?
Yeah. So a little bit of a backstory. I study international business and trade. And I studied in Finland. Then I moved to Canada in 2011. And when I came to Canada, there was this law that you needed to have what they call Canadian experience to work in what you brought from another country. But at that point,
so was that like eating maple syrup, or I'm going to be in trouble for that one? Sorry, go ahead.
If it was that simple, I'll be a champ eating maple syrup because I love it. I love maple syrup. It's just like one of the things that there is no pancake or I don't know, like whatever. You need to have maple syrup. But I think that is a conversation that maybe we can have another podcast about maple syrup, because it's a very interesting process how tedious and how much time it takes to get maple syrup. It just drops and drops from this tree.
Yeah, if anybody needs a Wikipedia rabbit hole, go look up the Great Maple Syrup Heist. There were a bunch of people who stole like hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars worth of
maple syrup. Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
But anyway, back to your story. Yeah. Sorry, the beer's kicking in.
Yeah, no, but this is a good one because they stole a big amount because Canada is one of the biggest suppliers in the world. So they took a lot of maple syrup. So I arrived to Canada in 2011, and obviously it was cultural shock for me switching countries from Finland, but I am originally from Nicaragua. So I came here and that was my first cultural shock, the law of Canadian experience. So I wasn't able to work in what I was doing back in Finland, and I needed to do multiple jobs. And finally, though, I got this job for this telecommunication company. And I was working before tech as a reporting and analyst. So we were collecting data from different channels, such as calls, chats, website, and providing that information to upper managers to take decisions around the business. So I did that for a couple of years. One thing that I noticed about this particular role is that things don't change. They're very repairable. 2015 hit, and I am 4 years living in Canada. Same thing, doing the same. One of my friends said, hey, he actually asked me, hey, what are you doing? I'm learning SQL because I want to move from this role to this other department, and they told me that I need to learn SQL. I was in SQL, and the other guy asked me, have you ever heard about the cloud? This is 2015, so AWS just started maybe 8 years before, almost 10 years, I believe. I think it was like 2005.
Let me see. What was the first service? Was it SQS?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think so. Let's take a look. Where are you at, Wikipedia? Let's go. I'm still, my goal is to be able to afford to have someone who is a producer on this show, who handles all the things and looks up random Wikipedia junk for me. That would be great.
Yeah. How about Wikipedia?
July 2002.
Okay. Actually. All right.
Yeah. I thought it was 2005. I didn't know it was 2002.
Yeah. That's what I remember. 2005.
I think it was released 2005. I think that's when the first service was actually released. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So 2015 hit, and then I'm trying to make my next move to the next department. And then my friend comes up to me. He look at me and he's look at my screen and say, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to learn this. Then he's randomly asked, have you heard about the cloud? And then I said, cloud? No, knowledgeable. Thinking, no, I never heard about the cloud. So what is the cloud? And then, yes, there is this Amazon brought this new service called Amazon Website Service. And this is a public cloud and it's growing right now. And there is a lot to learn, tons of information and courses. And he's shared with me a few articles, and it was a promising land, like good pay and like great opportunities. And the whole technology topic just hit me, and I said, wow, I want to do this. So from that moment on, the first thing I did is start investigating what was AWS and what are they doing. And the first course that I used at that point was coming from when a cloud guru was starting at that point.
And, oh yeah, I very much remember. I was working at Linux Academy around then.
So I, my friend and I, we were very enthusiastic about, hey, let's learn this cloud because you can get paid thousands of dollars just to have these certifications and whatnot. So obviously my motivation, other than switching my career, because I didn't know how hard it's going to be to switch my career. I just say, okay, I just want to go for this. I was basically new to the country. I just had a baby and I was getting tired of this repairable work. And so I said, let me try. So on the side, I was getting up every morning at 5 in the morning to study a couple hours for certifications. And then in the evening again. And in the first month, I got my first three certifications, the three associate certifications. They didn't even have a practitioner back then. And then I decided to go for professional, and then I was able to study for the professional, and I passed the exam. I know the requirement said that you need to have 2 years experience on the job, but certification back then were, I considered it, they were easier to pass. Now certification have been evolving a little bit more. They are more complex, more complicated. And they are not as easy as they were before. You need to like have more experience on the road. If you want to be a solutions architect, you need to have at least 5 years. 2015 was two. So now you need to study more. So I started studying. At some point, I started building stuff, building learning cloud formation, and about like different 3 tiers application, how they work. I didn't have a computer background, so it was me that starting from scratch to learn about, so what is a database?
I still remember my first database class. It was crazy. Like, I had known databases, I've deployed them, I've done it, but to me, it still was a black box. And I took this, and I'll make sure I share it. I took this just fantastic relational database course that just changed everything. All of a sudden, everything just got easy. It was awesome. And once you learn relational data and just how to deal with data and data models like that, everything else just makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Everything started, like you said, everything started making sense. And so I started doing this and trying to get more hands-on experience and talking with people in the industry, going to conference, trying to put my name there in different companies and showing that I have the motivation to learn. I wasn't asking for $120,000 a year, as the articles were misleading people, because at that point, I think that was a misleading for so many people. And I hope that at this point, for those people listening to this or watching this podcast, if you guys are starting, you cannot earn $250,000 a year when you have no experience.
Man, I really wish that was a joke. But no, I see it all the time.
Yes, it is hard, because you go there thinking, oh, I got six certifications, and you go there with no experience, and you only have theoretical experience, but real work is different. You can learn so much that a very good foundation, I'm going to say certification, helped me a lot to understand the ecosystem of AWS and how it works. But what actually gave me the real experience was working and building things, making mistakes, failing, and like hours of sweating of trying to fix one error that was only one white space that was there, and I couldn't figure it out for hours.
That Python white space and YAML white space is just the end of the world for some days. There have definitely been days where I've just like keyboard slammed and just like walked out.
It is painful. It is painful, but it is doable. I'm not going to say, please don't demotivate yourself. Keep going, keep learning, you know, try to find that one yes. Because I got 100 notes, no here, no there. But then finally I got one opportunity. I got some experience. And then from that experience, everything just continued going up smoothly. So I've been working in industry like for almost like 10 years now. And it's great. Like, I can talk perfectly about AWS. I can talk about all the projects that I have taken and all the courses that I've taken. And one of the courses that I'm going to say that really helped me a lot now, that was a very good course to take, was your Terraform course.
Your Terraform
course, honestly, like, it's about, you need to know what are the tools that are in demand. So Terraform was growing here in Canada, at least about 3-4 years ago. And it was just perfect that I met you and your course. And I just used this course, man. And now what I do is Terraform all the time. I Terraform apply myself.
Hey, how do you feel about OpenTofu? You got any thoughts on it, or you just not care?
So I have not used it. I have not gone there yet, so I have no much experience to be honest.
I don't think you guys are going to have to make that change. There's a lot of big companies that create like they create products for other companies or other business units or whatever using Terraform, and that starts to get in that gray area. Are you competing with Terraform Cloud? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? And all of a sudden the lawyers have to get involved. Things get expensive and everybody's just, oh, I'll just go to OpenTofu instead.
Yeah.
But in your case, just based on what I know about what you do, you'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
But I am very curious to see what kind of new features happen as the fork gets wider and wider, or the timeline, if you've been following a bunch of Marvel stuff, whatever. As things get wider and wider, I think it's going to start to, is OpenTofu just always going to try to be feature to feature? Or are they going to try to become their own platform? So that's going to be super interesting to see over the next
six months, year, 2 years, whatever.
One interesting part about OpenTofu is like how fast it was created.
Yeah.
Like in 24 hours. Everybody was on that. It showed, but also it showed how much these people like and love Terraform. It's so nice too, and it's not easy, but it's easier than other, and it's great. Like it's a great like tool. So it is like something. But yeah, and then what else I can say about my journey? So it's been like a roller coaster, up and down, but right now for the past Three years has been very solid. I've been with the AWS Community Builders community for 3 years. And I have been,
thanks for pointing me out to that. I just got into Community Builders as well. So that's been pretty interesting.
So I am very happy that somehow I can share my experience with those who are trying to break into the industry. And I hope I can continue doing it by writing more articles. And I also have a personal project in the queue that maybe at some point in this podcast, we're going to have the opportunity to mention.
Jump right in. I was about to ask you anyway what you were up to. So now is about that time to start discussing it, I think.
Yeah, first of all, let's bring some of the like cards on the table. I don't know if you are familiar, but like Spanish community and Spanish sources out there is very small. YouTube have a minimal amount of like courses or resources that people can use. So I am starting a new YouTube channel, and it's going to be fully in Spanish. And it's more related about what I do, so DevOps. The name of the channel is called Terra Espacio, which is like Terra for Terraform, and Espacio space. So I just mix it. I actually use an AI. Hey, can you help me to?
That's fantastic.
Can you help
me? So tell me this then. So you're building a bunch of content in Spanish.
Yeah.
And as somebody, obviously your English is second language. How much cognitive load do you think it is for most people who are English as a second language? Like whenever they're trying to learn something and then you compound that by it being in English versus Spanish, I don't really know how you would quantify that, but let's just say out of 100, how much of that learning do you think is the actual learning, and how much do you think is the extra amount of processing to translate English, which of course, again, and I'm talking about English speakers, but people who don't know English as well as, say, somebody like me who grew up with it. So for instance, you might say the course itself is, you lose 25% of the efficiency of the course just because you're trying to translate. That's a number I just threw out. Like, how much do you think it would be like out of, as a percentage, how much harder do you think you have to work within an English course versus a Spanish course?
Well, that's a very good question. And I don't have a number right now.
Yeah.
But
And it's different for everyone, obviously. Just a thought, just for the listeners to understand that
it's hard. Yeah, it takes obviously a lot of time because, first of all, there are no official documentations in Spanish. So you need to translate the official documentation in English. And then try to get that documentation and base that with your personal experience. So that takes a lot of time and effort to complete this. And quantity. I don't know. I will say that it's going to take at least like 90% of the job is like translating and trying to put this into Spanish word, and then 10% to teach what you just translated. And the problem though is that it might be that for those people that already say Spanglish speaking, they already know the words in English, so they always know it's AWS, it's not AWS. So they are used to those sounds, they are used to those names. So people need to re-educate about the names and conventions that are there for them. So I hope that's not gonna be a big challenge. I hope that for those who are already an existing community of users of AWS or any other resource related to cloud can understand it. But I'm looking more for those ones who are new. And the idea is also not to bring eyes to those who are creating this documentation that, hey, we need maybe more Spanish people to be included in the review of this documentation to be able to translate it. Because it's a big surprise that even this year when I went to reInvent, the community, demography of that was there, there is not much Hispanic people there. There is that's one thing, imagine there's not even women. There's woman factor there and the tech community is almost 0%. It's just so minimum. We need to try to break those barriers and try to help to grow those community, because I think that at one point or other, if we are all able to use this tool for one whole benefits, like the whole world is going to function better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's awesome. And I love the fact that you're helping with that. How difficult, obviously English is a pain in the ass as a language overall to learn. Most of the English speakers I know still barely can speak English, me included. Sometimes I forget words. I write very quickly. And so sometimes I probably make it worse for people trying to understand what the hell I'm trying to say. But when it comes to technical terms, how often, for instance, what is database in Spanish?
Base de datos.
Okay. That's a lot. That's a lot different. Yeah, it's a whole lot different. I know there are other technical terms that we get our own slang. We get our own everything going. And so not only are you dealing with English, you're dealing within a technical term that's very specific.
Yeah.
And then you end up with slang that was developed in English to represent a technical term that in English that you now, so you're like translating it multiple times. Yeah. And I can imagine how difficult that's got to be. Just looking at all the transcription apps trying to handle English to English from technical terms and they can't figure it out.
Yeah. And the thing for me is that I learned everything in English. I know all the tech terms in English. So now I need to learn in Spanish to be able to.
That's interesting. Do you think it would be helpful then? So once you do release these in Spanish, do you think adding English subtitles would be useful to people trying to learn English who need to also understand the tech terms?
I think it would be useful. Yeah, I was even thinking about that because what I have seen and I'm experienced is in Latin America, not everyone is bilingual, and I'm trying to break that barrier. So maybe I can definitely put the subtitles in English. So maybe I can reach out to a bigger audience that can, maybe they can listen to me speaking Spanish, but they can read. Like the same way when I was watching movies in English, I had subtitles, so I understood what was going on when I didn't speak English at that point. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what would be the best way for me to help to this community. I've been talking with AWS itself to see if they can give me credits. And to see if when I created the channel, I'm going to be able to say, hey, you know what? I have this credit with this code, $50. You can start using AWS with this. You can go through my...
We can find you more than $50. I'm sure somebody listening to this can find more than $50. This is a really good thing. I don't know your intentions with it. I don't know if you want to be massively for-profit, non-profit, a little bit of both, help people while still paying bills. I don't know. But I'm sure there's a lot of people that would love to talk to you about this and get you involved in whatever, because it's an incredibly noble effort. There's so many studies out there, of course, talking about how many South Americans are coming into the United States and all of this and looking for jobs and trying to level up and trying to do all these things. I think anything that any of us can do to help is substantial. And it sounds like what you're doing is such a massive benefit to these types of people that I think we could definitely find some people to help out.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. At this point, I'm just doing for the love of the pain that I had. So I want to share and that experience that I have. So I don't want anybody to go through all the situations that I went, you know, like many doors closed in my face. And then it's tough, man. And then you have other people also who are immigrants to this country, and they're trying to break into the industry too, because it's a great industry. There are great people around. You make good friends, and people try to help you in many ways. I'm trying to give back to the community. And yeah, that's my goal right now. But if there is something else that comes after that, I'm not asking for that right now. But my goal is just to work it through, learn. I'm seeing this as a challenge also. Can I be a good instructor? You know? Can I share my knowledge with people, accept what I'm telling? So I want to challenge myself also. Part of this too.
Yeah. Obviously, the best way to learn anything is to teach it. Look at me. I didn't even know what Terraform was when I started. No, I'm just kidding. I did. I had worked with Terraform a little bit before I started. No, that's good. And make sure I have a note here to translate this episode into Spanish also. Wow. So make sure you remind me. I'm going to make sure that I do that. It might cost a couple extra dollars, but I think this is something that this should be very useful to a lot of ESL listeners out there. So that'll be good.
I hope that the application that you're going to use is better at understanding Spanish accents.
Oh, I'm sure it's terrible. Whatever it is, I'm sure it's terrible. I'll definitely run it through you first, and you can go in and throw a little love to it because it might need a little help.
Okay.
But yeah, anything else you're working on? Anything else you want to share with the audience? Obviously, we'll give out all your social stuff and everything like that. I want to make sure that everybody knows how to get in touch with you if they can.
Yeah, other than that, we are here trying to see mostly like how to grow the community. So there are some plans in the queue that we are still under conversation, but I can share that something big is coming to this area in this province. At some point, I'm going to let you know, and you probably going to be one of the persons that we're going to have in our list to hope to have it if this come true. So keep that in mind. I'm going to, on the professional level, it's just we keep working in our IoT projects, and we keep testing hardwares and trying to get the perfect IoT device, which has been a tedious job to find one of those.
It is tough, isn't it?
So a lot of descriptions that don't show at the end when you test the devices.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, but it is a sector that is running, like it's running quickly and it's taking flight. And our company is a 105 years old mechanical and electrical engineering company. And we work a lot with a lot of buildings. So our goal is to keep helping our customers to enhance their facilities. Projects that we work, for example, is occupancy of the facilities. We collect data of occupancy in the different section of floors within the building. We create dashboard for our customers so they can see the occupancy percentile through the day, so they can plan for, let's use the example of cleaning. So during a specific day, we have less people. So let's put our team there to clean the space. Now, after pandemic, has been a trend now that people are working hybrid, so a few days at home, a few days in the office. So this helped building management to organize more their facilities. We are growing. We started with a few buildings. Now we are looking to a large number, like over 100 buildings that we're going to be monitoring.
So how's AI helping? I know when you started this, we've been talking for a while. Mm. This was before LLMs became such a massive thing and before AI took transformers, basically, is what we need to talk about.
Yeah.
It's transformers that changed everything and attention and all this other wonderful AI stuff that's come out. Did y'all just walk in one day? And again, obviously, you don't have to say anything if you can't, but just walk in one day and just be like, holy shit, all the stuff we've been doing for the past forever now, we have a completely different way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that what you have works well enough and efficient enough that it really doesn't matter? You don't need to do the paradigm shift?
Yeah.
Or are you starting to get those gears turning and really start to rip and replace with all the new fancy stuff?
Right. At the moment, mm-hmm. we are just like doing some research to see how we can implement this new technology. We are exploring the possibilities of using this, but we are not there yet. And AI is not there yet. People are using okay. it and everything. We are using machine learning, though. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So part of the industry is that architects, this is a big problem. Architects, they have their drawings, and in their drawings, they have these symbols. Let's call it like symbols, right? They said they square, I'm going to use a stupid example, a kitchen space. Every single architect, they can call it whatever they want.
Yeah.
So a lot of the work that we do as an engineering company is we get those blueprints of the building and then we use engineering tools. One of them is BIM. BIM stands for Business Building Intelligent Management and helps us to create 3D representations of the blueprint. Our engineers have problems, right? Because they need to go through this like piles of drawing this much. Of file, like hundreds of drawings, and then try to build these 3 blueprints. Our team is using machine learning to try to pick up those symbols and try to learn from for standard names and convention and try to name those spaces as they're supposed to be named. So we are using machine learning to go through these files, and this is saving 50% of the time of our engineers to complete their tasks. So we are using machine learning. We are not using AI, but I think that at some point our company has to go into that direction. So we are experimenting. We are doing some research because we work with healthcare facility, commercial facilities. So there are a little bit of policy for this in the spaces. And we do our best, obviously, to protect our IoT connections since we are using their network. And so we're not there yet, but hopefully at some point we're going to be at that level.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's awesome. That's really cool to hear. I'm really excited to see where that goes. But to be perfectly honest, I'm much more excited to see where your YouTube channel goes and all of this initiative to help so many people. Mm-hmm. Level up here in the US and get these jobs that they're hoping for. And if you're a hard worker, I'd hate to see language be the only thing that holds you back. And it sounds like you're the one who's going to try to remove that barrier, which is fantastic. So anyway, is there anything else you want to say to sign off? Again, I'll share all of your socials and share all of that good stuff, but anything you want to tell the people before we finish up?
Don't give up. That would be my advice. If you are new to cloud and you really want to work in this industry, continue do your research, talk to people in the industry. And if you want to learn Terraform, go ahead and get Derek's course.
Oh, thank you. All right, man. Gusto Valdivia, it has been an absolute pleasure to actually record one of our conversations.
Yeah.
Granted, I don't think we should record any of our previous ones. They usually get off the rails by about the third or fourth beer. What happens?
Yeah.
So anyway, thanks for listening to this episode of Ops and Hops. Cheers, everyone.
Yeah, cheers. And thank you for having me.